Going to continue tonight with our study of demons. Last week we looked at, and we won't rehearse it except for the next 22 minutes. I will rehearse it. We looked at the origin of demons, and we looked at four possibilities, and we kind of settled on one. We said the evidence seems to suggest that demons were the spirits of departed wicked men. Option number one, I don't even remember what it was. What was option number one? Oh, a pre-Adamic race. Well, that's not even worth looking at, because 1 Corinthians 15:45 says Adam was the first man. Option number two, a hybrid. Demons were hybrids from angels and humans mating, which also is not true. Jesus said, Matthew 22, 29 and 30, that doesn't happen. Angels don't marry. They're not given in marriage. Hebrews 1:14 says angels are spirits. Spirits don't mate with flesh. So rule that out. Option number three is a popular option in the denominational community, which doesn't rule it out automatically, does it? No. It's widely held, is why I mentioned it, that demons were fallen angels. A lot of people believe that. Also doesn't seem likely, though, because, as it Jude verse 6, 2 Peter 2:4 mentioned, there was a rebellion in heaven at some point in the distant past, but those angels that were involved in it, they're not going anywhere, and they're not bothering nobody. They've been reserved in chains of darkness, which obviously is a metaphor. It's figurative language. Angels are spirit beings. You don't have a spirit being reserved in physical chains. It's just a way for us to realize they're not going anywhere. God's got them in confinement, so to say. So it doesn't seem likely, though it's a widely held view. And we said the idea seems to be, what were demons? Where did they come from? They were the spirits of bad people, wicked dead men who, with the permission of God in a certain purpose, had escaped from their Hadean environment. Hades doesn't just mean hell. You hear Hades and think it's a polite way of saying hell. Hades just means the unseen realm of the dead. And so it's a generic word. Sometimes it's used more specifically. So they had escaped the Hadean realm. And we said you don't read about demon possession in the Old Testament. Demons just mentioned twice, and even then it's a reference to idol worship, to idolatry. But you come to the New Testament and there's 60 references. They're all over the gospel accounts. It seems like God allowed, with His permission, for that little window of time of Jesus' ministry, 3.5 years, and then the apostolic age just after it, demon possession to occur so Jesus and His men, the apostles, could demonstrate the superiority of Christ, the Christian system, over the demon world. Just like Jesus was master of the material world, the physical realm, He's the Lord of the spirit world as well. Tonight, what I want to do is notice some characteristics of demons, talk about the nature, the traits of demons as we see in the New Testament, keeping in mind a contrast between how, you know, people today, what they think of them. If you talk to people on the street, they'll probably tell you, I believe demon possession is real. I think my uncle's got one, you know. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. The first one I wanted to notice is one I'm not going to spend much time on because we talked about it last week. If you want to turn to Matthew 12, though, because we're going to read this verse in a minute. And I'm going to call on a couple of y'all to read tonight just to spice things up. It's Spice It Up Wednesday, just to keep you awake. I will call on you to read. You know what not to do if you don't want to read. Just look down. You know what I mean? Always make eye contact if you don't want to be called on, but not too much eye contact because then you will get called on. They'll think that he's interested. So just a right balance. Demons are spirits. That's the first thing I wanted to say. Don't get me off track. It won't work. Demons are spirits. Matthew 12, 43. Jesus said, when the unclean spirit has gone out of a person, it passes through waterless places seeking rest and finds none. So they're spirits. They're often called unclean spirits, evil spirits. And I just mentioned that to link it to what Jesus said after His resurrection. Remember in Luke 24, 39, the disciples were amazed. They see Jesus and they seem to be a little bit unsure of it all. And Jesus says, you know, you can handle me and you can see that it is I. Do not be afraid. And then He said in Luke 24, 39, a spirit does not have flesh and bones, like you see me have. So, you put two and two together, demons are called spirits. Matthew 12:43, other verses. Spirits don't have flesh and blood and bones, so spirits are not physical entities. Doesn't have a material body of any kind, it's pure spirit. Well, we already talked about that, so we're not going to talk about that. This is where I wanted to pick up tonight, with this trait of demons. They had knowledge, they were intelligent, they were aware of their surroundings. The word demon, if you look it up and try to find the derivation of it, the origin of it, you get different things. Some will say that it traces back to a root word having to do with a divine being, which we know is not so. The demons are not divine. They're not in the creator category. They're in the created category. Only God is in the creator category. Everything else, humans, angels, demons, were created. But one derivation of the word demon is that it comes from a root word that means to know, or a knowing one. I said I was going to call on someone to read, and I was going to call on Alan first to just pick on him. That's how I wanted to start my Wednesday night off. Luke 4, if you don't mind, 33 and 34. Luke chapter 4, 33 and 34.
In the synagogue there was a man who had a
Thank you. Okay, so look where we are. We're in Capernaum in a synagogue. Jesus wasn't born in Capernaum. He wasn't raised in Capernaum, but you read a lot about Capernaum in the New Testament. It sort of became his headquarters, if you want to call it that, his unofficial headquarters during his earthly ministry. He was in the synagogue. Synagogue wasn't so much the place of worship. That was the temple. Synagogue would have been a teaching institution, right, where they would have Bible class, if you want to call it that. So, here's a man that has an unclean demon, the spirit of an unclean demon, the ESV says, and he cries out, "Ha, what have we?" So I guess there was more than one. "What have you to do with us? What have you to do with us?" But then it's the B part of verse 33 that Alan read. "I know who you are, the Holy One of God." I've underlined that. I've bolded it in my notes. "I know who you are," and that's our point here. Demons had knowledge. They had awareness. And you know, there's questions here that I wish I could answer, but I don't think anyone can. Isn't that interesting, though? These demons, what did they know? It said, "I know who you are." The demons knew who Jesus was. How did they know who Jesus was? Isn't that something that's interesting to think about? How did they know? "I know who you are, the Holy One of God." And this is a point that we're going to come back to a little bit later on. Every single time, you know how, and I'm tipping my hand, but I just can't help but tip it. You know how in the movies, demons, you couldn't sit through a movie with demons if you were, you know, you have your children there, or if it's profanity, which none of us should want to listen to, because you know that's what's going to happen. You know, you have a movie today and someone's demon-possessed, you know they're going to curse, you know there'll be bad words, and they're going to take God's name in vain, you know that. But when you read every single time, without exception, in the New Testament, when demons spoke, I had a sermon I was going to do once, I don't think I ever did, called "When Demons Spoke." You know, you go through and look at each thing. Each time a demon spoke, what did that demon say? It's very interesting, and we'll look more at it a little bit later on. But here's my point. Every single time a demon spoke in the New Testament, they were polite, they were respectful of deity. They didn't tell Jesus, you know, "Shut up." They didn't tell Jesus, "Who do you think you are?" It's, "I know who you are. You're the Holy One of God." And what's amazing in Mark 5, and again, I'm ahead of myself because we're not to Mark 5 yet, but you remember the account of the demon-possessed man that hung out at the tombs hung out in the tombs, and nobody could go by there because the man with the demon was there, and nobody would go by there because he was so strong they tried to bind him with chains, but the demon would break the chains. You remember reading about that? It's actually three different Gospels recorded. The Synoptics all record that. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So here's this demon that nobody can go by the cemetery, so to speak, because the man with the demon is there, and he's freakishly strong because they can't bind him with a chain. And so obviously it's a fearsome thing, but when Jesus comes walking down the road one day, the demon comes and falls down at Jesus' feet. You know, I know who you are. Have you come to destroy us? You know, leave us alone. Please leave us alone. They were always very respectful. And so I guess the point is God is in control. God is in control. The battle between Satan and God is not a battle fought on equal footing. God has the upper hand. The Lord is in control. James 2:19, you could add to that. It's on the notes here as far as demons being knowledgeable beings. James said, you believe that there is one God, the King James says. The ESV says, you believe that God is one. You do well. Good, you know, good for you. You believe that there is one God. You're right, there is one God, James says. But then he adds this, even the demons believe and tremble, the ESV says, and shudder. And so the demons have knowledge. Specifically here in James 2:19, they have knowledge that there is one God. So they're intelligent. They're not, you know, dumb, I guess we would say. Number three, I want you to turn to Matthew 12. We looked at verse 43. Jesus said, when an unclean spirit passes out of a person or has gone out of a person, it passes through desert places, waterless places, seeking rest and finding none. Well, here was the third point about demons I wanted to make as far as their traits. They were volitional beings. And I don't even know what that means, all right? What? Volitional. You put a word like that up and you just risk losing everybody. Nobody, tuning out. You know, volition just means you have choice. If a demon is able, that's why I guess I should just put, they have choice. To an extent, to a degree, right? They didn't do anything without God's permission. But they were beings that could make choices. Are you in Matthew 12? Who would read? Who has verses 44 and 45? All right, thank you. There's a lot of things here I've marked in my notes. Look at verse 44. Jesus already said, he talks about what happens when an unclean spirit has gone out of a person. What does it say? It says in verse 44, I will return to my house. And house here is not like where you live as far as your home. You know, it's the body that it came out of from the context. So here the demon says, I'm going to go back to my house that I came out of. Verse 45, it says, it goes and brings with it seven other spirits more evil than itself. So I wanted to make a couple of points here. First of all is this, demons could choose. Demons could choose the kind of body they wanted to enter into, young or old, male or female, so they had the power of choice. But notice, and this is interesting, verse 45, when he comes back and finds the house empty, swept, and garnished, he goes, it's referred to as it, isn't it, throughout this, it finds seven other spirits more evil than itself. Do you see that? Seven other spirits more evil than itself. So we see that there are levels of morality, or I guess in this case it would be immorality, but you've got levels of morality even in demons. Isn't that interesting? Just like some human beings are worse than others, isn't that true? Sure it is. Just like some human beings are worse than others, some apparently demons were worse than others. Seven other spirits more evil, more wicked than itself. Have you ever thought about that? And I guess it only stands to reason if we think about where demons come from, the origin of demons. They're the departed spirits of dead, wicked men. Well, some men in life were more evil than others, so it only stands to reason that some demons will be worse than others as well. That makes sense to me, at least. But here's something I wanted to point out. I think it's a common idea. I think it's a common idea that the reason demons entered into people was because the people they entered into were evil, and that the demons entered into them somehow as some type of a punishment. You know? Well, they wouldn't have entered into them if they hadn't been evil. They only entered into wicked people. No, that's a generalization, you know, that won't stand up to if we look at it. In other words, that's not always true. It's not always the case. I wanted to show you a couple of examples here and think about something. Will you turn to Mark 7? And what are we doing turning to Mark 7, 24, 25? We're debunking the idea that demons only entered people because the people were evil and God was punishing them. That's not the case. It doesn't seem to be the case. All right, Mark chapter 7, and I wanted to read verses 24 and 25. Who doesn't mind to read that? Read it. Loud, I don't have the microphone with me. Mark 7, 24 and 25, please.
From there he arose and went to the region of Tyre, Sidon, and he entered a house and wanted no one to know it. But he could not be hidden, for a woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet.
All right, thank you. Yeah. Eric, what version are you reading from? New King James says, young daughter. So I think the ESV has little daughter, same difference. Little daughter, not just her daughter, her young daughter, her little daughter had an unclean spirit. So here is a little girl, not a wicked person, that's my point. Here is a little girl, and for reasons that look, let's just admit it, we cannot fully explain. For reasons we cannot fully explain, the demon decided to go and enter into her body. And was permitted to do so by God. And so what's our point? Demons are volitional beings. They make choices. You could also reference here, flip over two chapters. You're in Mark 7, turn to Mark 9, and you have the same point made. Mark chapter 9, I think it's verse 21. You remember when Jesus went up on the mountain and was transfigured? He took Peter, James, and John up on the mountain, was transfigured before them, and then Peter says, you know, it's good to be here and all that. And they go back down the mountain, and when they come back down the mountain, what do they stumble up upon? What do they come up upon? Well, here's a father who has a boy with an unclean spirit, and while the three disciples have been on the mountain with Jesus, he's been trying to get the other disciples to cast out this demon, and they can't do it. Right? They can't do it. And so Jesus comes, assesses the situation. He says, well, Master, my boy has his spirit, and I tried to get your disciples to cast him out, and they could not. And so Jesus starts talking to this daddy about his boy. And, you know, what happens to him? What's going on? And he says, well, oftentimes it takes him, this demon tries to kill him. It takes him and throws him into the fire, tries to drown him in the water. And Jesus says to him, how long has this been happening? How long has this been the case? And the father says in verse 21, from childhood, from a little boy, depending on what version you have, from his youth. I heard a sermon once. We were over in Mississippi. I think we were in Hattiesburg. Mike Benson preached this sermon. Brother Benson's now at Oxford. Brother Benson preached a sermon entitled, Are You a Normal Christian? And I liked it so much, I borrowed it. And I think I've preached it here, as a matter of fact. But he talked about this daddy and what he must have been through. He talked about what real life is like, you know. And he said, think about the care this boy would have required. Here's a boy that his parents can't turn their backs on. Can you imagine? Obviously, he's of some age. He's had this from his youth. And the father, you know, they didn't have a minute's rest. You know, they couldn't sleep easy. They had to have one eye open because this boy who's had a demon from childhood, the demon tries to drown him, tries to burn him. Can you imagine what their life would have been like? And I think his point was normal Christians have struggles. Normal Christians have problems, and it doesn't make you not normal to have problems. In fact, it makes you very human, makes you very normal. But you could add that to it from childhood. And I wanted to say this too while I'm thinking about it. Turn to Mark 16, please. Sometimes Mary Magdalene gets a bad rap. Mary Magdalene sometimes has a bad reputation because she had been demon-possessed. But again, that doesn't mean it was her fault. It doesn't mean she was being punished for some sin she had committed. In Mark 16, look at verse 9. We want to start in verse 9. We think about Mark 16, you know, the Great Commission being given later on in the chapter. But we have in verse 9 the resurrection. Now, when He, Jesus, rose early on the first day of the week, this is Mark 16, 9, He appeared first to Mary Magdalene, from whom He had cast out seven demons. Remember, the word devils is not correct translation. It's demons. There's only one devil, many demons. But at any rate, I've underlined that. He had cast seven demons out of Mary Magdalene. I don't know if that was seven at once. I don't know if it was one that came back and came back and came back. I don't know what the difference would be. It's just academic. But He cast out seven demons. And isn't it amazing? He appeared first to her. I was thinking earlier today, this is one of those telltale signs that the Bible is inspired. It's not made up. It's not a forgery. Because what man, what group of men, if they're trying to invent or concoct a story they're going to foist on people, would pick for the first person to see the resurrected Christ to be a woman who had been possessed by demons seven times? You see that? They're not going to invent a story like that. That has all the earmarks of genuineness to it. And that also gives us an idea why Mary Magdalene loved Jesus so much. Right? She was thankful to Him. He had cast seven demons out of her. She was grateful for what He had done. And I thought again, I wonder if we're as thankful to Jesus as Mary Magdalene was. You know, Jesus healed us of something worse than demon possession, right? Demon possession would have been a physical malady. It caused physical effects. But Jesus healed us of a spiritual malady, right? Sin. Much worse than demon possession. I wonder if we're thankful to Jesus or Mary Magdalene was. But now keep reading in verse 10. She went and told those who had been with Him as they mourned and wept. But, verse 11, when they heard that He, Jesus, was alive and had been seen by her, they would not believe it. I emphasize by her. I don't know that that's emphasized. But it's interesting to me. Ever thought about that? When Mary Magdalene came, when they heard that He had been seen, oh, so Jesus has been seen? Oh, well, by her. Do you think maybe, I'm speculating, but do you think maybe in the back of their minds they thought when she comes to them with, I've seen the Lord. He is risen. And they're like, okay, all right. This is Mary. Just keep in mind this is Mary Magdalene and she's had seven demons in the past. Well, I'm not saying that it's true, but maybe she's demon-possessed again. Maybe she's hallucinating. You know, when they heard it from her, they didn't believe it. And I just wonder. I just wonder in the back of their mind if they're not thinking, well, we know the score. She may have a demon again. But again, that shows. That just shows a person can have had demons and it not been any fault of their own. Now, here's what I want to transition to in the time that we have left. This was the sermon I told you I wanted to do. I want to do a sermon called When Demons Spoke. Because it's interesting to go through the New Testament and see what they actually believed when they talked. I think it makes for a very interesting study. Because whatever else you may say about demons, they were intelligent beings. They weren't stupid. They knew certain things. And I'll mention one. I'm going to mention five things if I can do it. First of all, tell you this, demons were not atheists. That's an obvious one. Demons, whatever else is true about demons, they were not atheists. James 2:19, we've already quoted, you believe that God is one, good for you, you do well. Even the demons believe. Even the demons believe in God and tremble. You know what else you can say? They're not demons. Not only were they not atheists, they were not polytheist either. What's a polytheist? You remember Louis Grizzard? Y'all remember reading Louis Grizzard, the columnist out of Georgia? Died in 1994. He was a famous humorist, and he once gave the definition of politics. Do you remember that? He said you just break down the word into its two parts. Poly means many, and then tick means blood-sucking organism. And so politics is many blood-sucking organisms. Now, I didn't say that. And if you're, and that's, don't get mad at me. He died in 1994, and it would be rude, I think, to get mad at a dead person. Polytheist, poly means many. They didn't believe in many gods, right? They believe that there is one God. So they're not atheist. They're not polytheist. But in life, obviously, their faith had not been coupled with obedience. It was a dead faith. And James says, that can't save. Here's the second thing. Demons were not modernist. Now, modernist is just one of those terms that gets bandied about in theological circles. A modernist is basically someone who denies miracles, that miracles ever occurred. They deny that Jesus was born of a virgin. They deny that He performed the miracles. They try to find rational reasons, you know, naturalistic reasons to explain away the miracles of the Bible. Turn to Mark chapter 3. And look at verses 11 and 12. Mark 3, 11 and 12. And whenever the unclean spirits saw Him, they fell down before Him and cried out, "You are the Son of God." And He strictly ordered them not to make Him known. And the point I wanted to make in saying they were not modernist is notice they didn't address Jesus as the son of Joseph or of any other, you know, human father. They knew that Jesus was born of a virgin. They called Him the Son of God. Right? There are many religious leaders today who refuse to make that confession that Jesus was born of a virgin. In that case, then, they don't even rise. Isn't it amazing? They don't even rise to the level of the demonic. If you deny the virgin birth, you don't even rise to the level of demons. And I had a question. I had a question I wanted you to think about for a second, if you're up to thinking about a question. Why? Look at verse 12. Because in verse 11, they said, "You are the Son of God," and Jesus strictly, sternly charged them not to make Him known. Why do you reckon, why do you think Jesus ordered the demons not to make Him known? I thought that's what He wanted. Didn't Jesus want people to know that He's the Son of God and confess Him before men? Why do you think He told the demons? I think that could be part of it. Brother Ken said to not expedite His crucifixion, right? I think that's a possibility. What else? Who am I talking to? Yes, Matthew. Yeah, I think that's part of it too. And I think both of those are excellent reasons. There's many possibilities, but one I would consider, and turn to Matthew chapter 9. And I think you're both right. Jesus was operating according to a divine program, and He wasn't going to be rushed to that hour before His time. John repeatedly refers to that in his gospel. That's spot on. And also what Matt said. Look at Matthew 9, 32 and 34. If Jesus had allowed the demons to go around and testify that He was the Son of God, what do you think people would have said? In Matthew chapter 9, look at verse 32. Jesus cast out a spirit, doesn't He? An unclean spirit from a person. And what did the people say? What was their reaction? The Pharisees. Some of them said, you know, verse 33, this was a remarkable thing. Haven't seen anything like this in Israel. But the Pharisees who were always ready to pour cold water on it, they said, He cast out demons, all right, but He does it by the prince of the demons. In other words, Jesus is operating in league with the devil. And Jesus debunked that later on and said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. If Satan cast out Satan, his kingdom is destroyed, and that makes no sense. But you see what they would have said. If Jesus had allowed the demons to go around and saying, "This is the Son of God," people were going to say, He's in league with the devil. I think that's a very likely scenario. Okay, number three. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I think that's another good point. I think so. I was thinking about the man because Mary Magdalene had demons expelled from her and Jesus allowed her to serve in a more private capacity, ministering to him. But I thought about another individual, and it's the one that we had read about. It was that very one in Mark 5 that was so strong the chains couldn't bind him. When Jesus cast out the demon from him, the demons, plurals, we'll see in a minute. Remember that man wanted to go. He begged Jesus that he might be with him. And Jesus wouldn't let him do that, but Jesus said, go home and tell the people what great things God has done for you. So Jesus didn't forbid him from saying anything, but he didn't allow him to become part of his inner circle. And that's interesting to me. It kind of speaks to what you said. You can go home and you can tell them what happened, but he wouldn't let him be part of his inner circle. So I think that's another excellent point. I hadn't really thought about that one before that. All right, turn to Luke chapter 8. What did demons believe? They certainly conceded Jesus' authority. Luke 8, and I wanted us to read, we have 10 minutes. Blake, what's the official time? And don't tell me 18 seconds. What do I got? I got 6 minutes? Five? All right. Okay, I'm just going to have to paraphrase this. Look at Luke 8, beginning in verse 26. This is so fascinating because it's also in Matthew chapter 8. It's also in Mark 5. This is the guy, you know, that's so strong that the chains can't hold him. Well, here he comes. One account says there's two men. One account says there's one. That's no contradiction. One was either more remarkable than the other. One was maybe the spokes demon for the other. But Jesus asked him, what is your name? And the demon answers. I don't know if Jesus was asking the man, what is your name? And before the man can answer, the demon answers. I don't know exactly what happened there. But before the man can answer, the demons, my name is Legion, for we are many. Well, that's scary, isn't it? Because you know from your history that a legion was somewhere between 3,000 and 6,000. In the ancient Roman army, a legion, the upper bounds of a legion was 6,000 soldiers. And so Jesus says, what is your name? This is in verse 30, Luke 8, 30. My name is Legion, for we are many. Now, I don't know that the demon was saying, I've counted it in here. There's 6,000 of us, but there was a bunch, however many there were, right? I remember when Jesus was about to be arrested and Peter said, I'm not going to have this. I'm going to cut off Malchus's head with my sword. And he missed and only got Malchus's ear. And Jesus says in Matthew 26, 53, put up your sword. Don't you know that if I wanted to, I could pray to my Father and He would send me now even more than 12 legions of angels. More than 12 legions. All right. And you know, a legion, if a legion 6,000, 12 times that is 72,000. And Jesus said more than that. I think that's like when He said to forgive not 7 times, but 70 times 7. He wasn't putting a number on it. He was just saying a bunch. You know, the song we sing, He could have called 10,000 angels. And every time I read that, I think He could have called a whole bunch more than that. You know, 72,000 just doesn't roll off your tongue as well, I suppose. But here we're talking about a legion of demons. And my point is, look at verse 31. They begged Him. They begged Him not to command them to depart into the abyss. Right? They knew that when their time came, they would have to obey Christ's voice. So they're not saying, who do you think you are to command us? You think you can tell us what to do? They knew absolutely that He could tell them what to do and make them do it. What a powerful Lord we serve. Let me add these two quickly before we put an end to it tonight. They did not deny personal responsibility. Turn back to Matthew 8. This is the same. This is the parallel to the account we just read in Luke 8. Matthew 8, 28, 29. Specifically verse 29. They said, what have you to do with us, O Son of God? Have you come here to torment us? And then I've underlined it in verse 29. Before the time. Have you come here to torment us before the time? Well, they knew. They might have had a little bit of a reprieve, a momentary reprieve, but they knew that a certain time was coming when they were going to give an account to Him for their wickedness. There was going to be a time when they were tormented, but they said, have you come to do it now before the time? They knew. Well, the inhabitants of Hades are well aware of who's in charge, are they not? And they're not talking back to Him. They're not smarting off to Him, right? They're, yes, sir. No, sir. Please don't do this. Or please do this. I think that's remarkable. And then finally, number five, we've already kind of hinted at. What did demons believe? Well, I'll tell you this. They did not deny the reality of hell. I was looking through today. It's popular among, I can't even bring myself to call them evangelical writers, because you're not evangelical if you deny there's a hell, right? But I was reading, is it Rob Bell? I think that's who it is, that came out with a book that influenced some folks. And he said, what if there's no hell? Well, if there's no hell, then Jesus didn't know any better, because he talked a lot about it, right? Demons knew better, unlike some modern day preacher, quote unquote. Demons didn't deny that hell is real, right? Look at Matthew 8:29 that we just looked at, and also James 2:19. Why did James say, you believe that God is one, you do well? Even the demons believe and shudder and tremble. Why do they tremble? Why do they shudder? If there's no hell, why do they care? Why are they afraid, right? They know what's in store for them. They knew torments in their future, and they trembled at the thought of it. And so I know I've gone through these quickly, but it's interesting to me. It's really sad. That's the point I guess I wanted to make. Is it not sad that so many folks today don't even have as much sense as a demon? They don't have the knowledge. They don't have the faith to rival even a demon. Demons believe in God. Plenty of people today don't. Demons believe that Jesus was virgin born. They didn't deny His miracles. Some people do. They yielded. They knew that He was in authority. So many people today reject it. They knew they're responsible for their actions. How many people today don't believe that? And they knew that there's a hell. How many people today? Right? I think that is a tragic circumstance, that so many people today don't even have the faith of a demon, and it's one that ought to strike a note of terror in their hearts, shouldn't it? To not even have as much faith as a demon. Well, what I wanted to do, Lord willing, next week is finish this little brief series on demons, put part three to it, and conclude it. And ask the question, the only question that really remains, we talked about the origin of demons, the nature of demons, and what they believe. And then the only question remaining, I guess, or the big question for us is this, is there demon possession today? Whatever became of demon possession? Why did it happen in the first place, which you've already really alluded to, but why does it no longer occur? How do we know that there's no such thing as demon possession today? And we don't have to worry. You know, you watch a scary movie, you might end up demon possessed. Right? We'll talk about that, Lord willing, next week. But thank you for tonight. I appreciate your being here very much.